You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 272 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington. Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion.
You're rolling with that one.
Seattle Seahawks. It's like Oregon when people call it Oregon.
Stumbling over your words is like Oregon. We are back in Renton, Washington. No more Oregon. And training camp is starting for the Seattle Seahawks this week.
In Renton, Washington.
Whew, the synergy when we will not be talking about the Seahawks.
We're talking about them a little. They are not going to be our
focus
this week.
A hydroplane podcast.
Oh, we got a lot to get to. We don't sadly have a Seafair preview because this would have been, pour some out, this would have been Seafair.
It's kind of early this year, right?
Yes, it's the earliest it possibly could be Seafair because Sunday falls on the 1st.
Because it's not happening.
it's the latest you could possibly have Seafair because it's not between 2019 and 2022. But damn it, they did a Hapo Columbia cover.
There we
We're going to talk about that in a second here. We're going to talk a lot about the Kraken, a huge week for the Kraken with our correspondent and is seen on ESPN, Randy Cote.
That was incredible.
But first, we got to get to this week's beer. We are not a beer from Oregon Wine Country this week. Instead, it's from our friends at Stoop Brewing, the No Sleep Till Ballard IPA. No Sleep Till Ballard. I thought that was what you were going to go with there. Born and bred in Ballard, the USA, this IPA rocks the old school and new school hops. Chinook and Centennial hops from Roy Farms bring the pine, grapefruit, and lemon, while Vic's Secret hops pack a pineapple passion fruit punch. To keep this party rocking 8 days a week, we kept the malt bill soft and gentle on the palate. Like a lemon to a lime, a lime to a lemon, you'll sip this deaf ale with all the fine women and men, or whoever you want to sip it with.
With a solo from Kerry King. Here we go.
So this will tie in a little bit to our chicken when we talk about this.
But really?
Well, yeah.
It won't.
No, it will.
No, totally different neighborhood.
All right, our toast this week, we start with to Sue Bird for serving is the co-flag bearer for the USA, is the delegation, Team USA, entered the Olympic opening ceremonies. I mean, what a come up from Sue Bird. From at one point, she was so unfamous that she was on this podcast.
No.
Third Pelton Brothers, Sue Bird.
No, that couldn't have happened.
Now she's carrying in the flag. She's on the cover of Time magazine. It's incredible.
I'll tell you, huge week for people who've been on this podcast. We've got Randy on the NHL expansion draft, and of equally similar importance, we have Sue Bird as the flag bearer.
It's toast to Randy.
All right, yeah, another toast to Randy.
That's great. All right, to Christian Roldan of the Sounders for serving up the game-winning assist.
Are there certain moments, before we get there, are there certain moments that somehow make you patriotic, and is this one of them?
The U.S. soccer match or the opening ceremonies?
Sue Bird in the opening ceremonies.
Oh, of course. I mean, look, I would be patriotic for whatever country Sue Bird was from. If Sue Bird had been Australian, I would be patriotic for Australia at that point.
Yeah. Like, yep.
I'm following Sue anyway.
Yeah, with Matisse Thybulle, we're patriotic for Australia.
Oh, 100%. And retroactively for Lauren Jackson and for Ezzie Magbegor and Stephanie Talbot.
Most of the Seattle Storm starting lineup.
A good percentage of it.
But we're patriotic for whatever country Sue Bird is from.
Exactly.
There we go.
But also patriotic for whatever country Christian Roldan is from.
There it is.
And that's the USMNT.
Don't ask about Alex Roldan.
I mean, I'm sure he would play for the U.S. if he was of that caliber. For the only goal in their 1-0 win over Jamaica in Sunday's Gold Cup quarterfinals, the U.S. will now face Qatar in the semifinals Thursday. Qatar is my favorite country in CONCACAF.
Hated rivals, Qatar.
Alex Roldan headed back to Seattle after El Salvador lost to Qatar in the quarterfinals on Saturday.
Well, Christian Roldan has to avenge that loss for his brother.
Absolutely.
This was actually, I watched some of this match. This was a pretty fascinating match considering the club that the U.S. men's national team put together for this Gold Cup.
Right. It's not the big stars, the big up-and-coming young players who play in Europe are not part of this team.
This is also the first time that you could say that about the United States.
You
said both big stars and big up-and-coming young players. What country are we talking about? Is this Subertistan? Like, how often can you say that about the U.S. men's national team? There were so many good young players in U.S. men's national soccer that they actually had to go back to Europe to play soccer.
Yes, and that they got this cold cup period off so that they could be rested for the start of their European season. It's an incredible thing to imagine. But yeah, I mean, for a game that was 1-0, it was really thrilling because it seemed like the sides, it was like kind of like a basketball game where nobody could make a shot. They just kept going back and forth, fast breaking, you know, on the counter and coming up with opportunities, but not scoring until the very end.
Well, and even seeing Matthew Hoppe, who scored the goal, right, he's 20 and plays for FC Schalke in the now Bundesliga 2, I learned, for Schalke was relegated this season.
Tough break.
But it was a tough season for them. But still, even the fact that he was starting for most of the season for a Bundesliga team, even if they were relegated, is pretty impressive at 20 years old for an American player.
Absolutely.
So,
looking forward to checking that out on... Well, no, I'm not looking forward to checking it out. It's on Thursday. I'm looking forward to covering the NBA draft. It's
there we go.
Next up, we mentioned it, to Kent's Corey Peabody for getting his first career H1 Unlimited win at the Hapo Columbia Cup with the Pinnacle Peak Consulting. He passed his teammate J. Michael Kelly in the Mistri Cities after Kelly's boat suffered damage in that final heat, leading much of the way. A surprising third-place finish for Jimmy Shane, who had won all four preliminary heats in the Miss Home Street.
Wow, Kent's own.
Yeah.
So we are taking it on this hyper-specific podcast that covers sports and food from the city of Seattle all the way down to the microclimate of South King County.
Of course. A hotbed for unlimited hydroplane racing.
Oh my God, that's huge. Can you tell us a little bit more about Kent's Corey Peabody?
Not a whole lot of background. I think this is his first, as I understand, I think this might be his first season driving.
Wow.
So there you go.
There we go.
Yeah. And it was the hometown team owned by Daryl Strong from the Tri-Cities who bought these boats this year and put together this team. So big, very exciting to go 1-2 in the final here, as they did in the opposite order when J. Michael Kelly won in Guntersville, Alabama, back in the season opener. So sadly, just one more race left on the H1 Unlimited circuit this summer, as they'll be in San Diego in September with no seafare.
Well, if you see Corey Peabody at the local Fred Meyer or whatever,
be sure to say hello.
Yeah, to give him a fist bump for winning.
Pretty congratulations.
Hapo Columbia Cup with Pinnacle Peak Consulting.
Yep.
I'm sure it was what he
dreamed of as a child.
He is like, if I ever win that Hapo Columbia Cup with Pinnacle Peak Consulting during a pandemic, there we go.
Yeah, I don't feel like the pandemic really took away from the celebration, though.
I'm sure it didn't in Eastern Washington.
Yeah. On a sadder note this week, we are remembering former Seahawks offensive coordinator Greg Knapp, who died Thursday at age 58 due to injuries suffered when a car hit him while he was biking the previous Saturday. Knapp had recently been hired as the Jets passing game coordinator this season after previously serving as the Atlanta Falcons quarterback coach. He spent 1 year with the Seahawks as offensive coordinator in 2009. So, very sad news from the NFL. All right, now let's turn our attention to the Kraken. Sadly, you could not join us for our interview with Randy. You were busy with your 10 to 15 children.
Tending to my 10 to 15 children.
Yeah.
But Randy had to be done in time for Jeopardy, I think.
It was a great conversation with Randy, nonetheless. Let's get into it. Well, coming off of the biggest week in Seattle Kraken history, undoubtedly. Not that there's a lot for comparison necessarily, but this was, we packed all this stuff. Expansion draft. Number 2 pick in the NHL entry draft, the schedule, finding out when we're going to open Climate Pledge Arena. We had to bring back Randy Cote, is our Kraken correspondent, to talk about it all, especially because he was in the heart of it as part of the broadcast for the expansion draft. What a pleasant surprise to be just watching on ESPN and all of a sudden, wait, there's Randy.
I mean, the Pelton cast mafia knows no boundary. We are everywhere, okay? Pelton Cast Illuminati for life. It's funny, you mentioned the biggest week in Seattle Kraken history. I think it was Gary Payton or Sean Kemp, when they were up there as part of their picks live at Gasworks, one of them said a comment like, Yeah, and you know, I think we're gonna have a really good squad this year for the Kraken. Like, as if last year's squad was total garbage or something. So,
I was interpreting that as we're gonna be competitive right away, not as by comparison to last.
Totally,
year.
Yeah. No, when you said biggest week in Seattle Kraken history, I was like, oh, don't tell that to Sean Kemp because he knows the storied history of the Seattle Kraken. Yeah, no, huge week. The draft was totally wild. I was super honored to be a part of the broadcast through the Space Needle. Obviously, you know, NHL Studios wanted to, NHL Studios out of New York is in charge of the expansion draft production, the beautiful stage and setup at Gasworks Park, and the broadcast itself. So they wanted to make sure it was as Seattle as possible. And I think folks forget the Vegas expansion was a 30-minute addition to the NHL awards in Vegas. It was not its own 90-minute thing showcasing Seattle. Honestly, it was like a 90-minute infomercial for how beautiful and gorgeous Seattle is in the summer.
You could not have picked a more perfect day for it. It was like a little cloudy in the afternoon, but then it cleared up and everything was great.
Yeah, so they wanted to go everywhere Seattle, and obviously, you know, they made it down to the aquarium, the market. We had them at the Space Needle for filming with Kevin Weeks. It was a little movie magic, obviously. So we filmed with them on Tuesday. And then the reveal was on Wednesday. They obviously tried to make it look like he was running around Seattle, but yeah, obviously it was a sunny day at Gasworks, and suddenly at the top of the Space Needle, it was cloudy. So I think that gave it away just a little bit. But
yeah, what also gave it away, because I'd already seen a photo of you at the draft party at Gasworks, and you were not wearing a suit in that one.
That is true. And I will say, it was some behind the scenes, and I think people learned this with the whole, you know, Toronto Kerfoot thing leaking earlier. Someone shared a clip of the Pike Place Market fish throwing, showing a pic of Kerfoot from Toronto. And then later other versions of that came out. We did film three versions at the Space Needle with two players that were not used. And then the third one, which we did use, which was the, hey Ron, who are we taking from Philadelphia? Cause it was a game more of a unscripted decision. So yeah, it was fun to be a part of it. Kevin Weeks, who I've seen on my screen a lot, was just a hoot to work with. And the whole crew from NHL was a blast. And I'm just so happy we have a team. Like it's incredible to actually see players up on the stage wearing the jersey. And, you know, it's hard to imagine those six players that we saw up on the stage not skating for the team on opening night. It's, you know, they signed some contracts with some of those guys. The very next day, we had them back on Thursday at the Space Needle, sort of touring around, getting a view of the city, just getting them acquainted with Seattle before they went down to the Mariners game and did some other things. So, yeah, those six that you see are going to be kind of the faces of the franchise as we move toward opening night.
Yeah, it seemed like there was some scuttle about Mark Giordano being rerouted elsewhere. But again, I think to your point, you don't make him that visible a part of it if that's your plan. Now, sometimes plans change, but that can't be your plan.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks believe he'll be the first captain of the team just because he's so experienced. And I think one of my, if I had to pick favorite moments from Wednesday night, you know, Mark Giordano was never drafted in the entry draft. Yeah. He worked his way up, and then he's had this tenured career with Calgary. So I think he said it on the stage, like, this is so exciting. It's the first time I've ever been drafted. So hopefully that holds a special place with him and he does stick around. But yeah, I was pretty pleased with all six of the guys that were there on site. There weren't any blockbuster top tier sort of stars that
there weren't the players that Tristan and I had heard of.
Correct. Yes. Like if I was going through that filter, I think Jordan Eberle would be the only one that I would be like, he's sort of the biggest name, and Mark Giordano, the two of them. But I think for you guys, that's kind of a B list. It's not Connor McDavid or Mark Messier.
PK Subban, we would have been good with. And Tristan did have the suggestion. He was upset. He thought that the Kraken should have just drafted Ovechkin so that they could sell Ovechkin jerseys, even knowing that they would not have been able to sign him. I don't know if that's a good strategy, but that was his plan.
I mean, when you've got a $1 billion arena to pay off, all of the merch sales help, right? So I'm not, like, Tristan's onto something, that's for sure.
I mean, Brandon Tanev, I thought, was an immediate presence at the expansion draft. He I expect will be a fan favorite.
And he, after the broadcast ended, they had, they brought the six guys back out, and they had sort of a Q&A session with the six players, all the fans, JT Brown and John Forslund, the TV broadcast team for the Kraken, sort of emceed that and asked them a bunch of questions. So you can imagine on the ESPN broadcast, people already love Brandon Tanev from his interactions there. They asked him, how would you sum up a typical Brandon Tanev shift on the ice in one word? And he said, chaos. And the fans that were in attendance went wild. And it was like, oh yeah, no, people are going to love this guy. They already love this guy. So yeah, no, it was a good group. And on a sort of, you know, more behind the scenes level, even just taking them around the space needle on Thursday, I think obviously NHL players are super, super humble guys, really, you know, really easygoing. They're a fun group. They're already cracking jokes with each other and starting to form that relationship and
cracking jokes.
Oh God. Oh, that was unintentional, but we'll take it. But no, I think all of those guys, are just sort of class acts. And I think the fans are going to fall in love with all of them for lots of reasons. So
yeah, that seemed to be sort of a theme, I think, of this expansion draft is, you know, not necessarily taking the most talented player available, but a lot of players with reputations as hard workers.
Yep. And, you know, I think there were a couple picks that I thought, you know, we learned later in the week, if I'm not mistaken, Yanni Gourde, who's coming from Tampa Bay, the Stanley Cup champions. I think we already know he's injured and won't start the season. So that was sort of a letdown. You see the big name come out and then realize he's not going to play. But right, the Hayden Fleury and his brother Cale Fleury both being on the team, I thought, both drafted by the team, I thought was a pretty cool storyline. Yeah. Alexander True getting drafted from the San Jose Sharks, former Seattle Thunderbird. He was part of the game-winning goal that won the WHL championship for the T-Birds back in 2017. On a personal level, Joey Decord, the first Sun Devil player to ever play in the NHL.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah. Because, right, we only went D1 a few years ago. He got drafted by Ottawa. He played in their AHL system for a bit and played in his first NHL game last year. And, yeah, so right in the crowd, he was the, like, fifth or sixth pick in the expansion draft. Everyone's looking around like, who the fuck is this guy? And I'm going nuts. I was screaming. I was hooting and hollering. And the people around me know, like, oh yeah, Joey Decord. Obviously, he's a Sun Devil. My friends that are there. But all the other people were like, who the fuck is Joey Decord? I never heard of this guy. So, no, I thought there were a lot of sort of those sweetheart sort of fun stories to follow through. And the bigger names, too. I mean, like, Jamie Oleksiak, and Chris Dreiger, like, those guys are up and coming. I think the fans do have some concerns and some things they're looking for, like the goaltenders, the three goaltenders we have, I think have a combined, maybe I'd have to look at the number, less than 80 games played total for all of them in the NHL. Whereas, you know, that's basically a season. They have less than a season's worth of experience between all of them. So obviously, you know, up and coming goaltenders, we drafted a lot of defensemen and we need some centers, but obviously right in the entry draft on Friday with the second overall pick, we took a center in Matty Beniers. And I think everyone was really excited about that pick, and he'll be a game changer for the team at some point, hopefully in the next year or two, we get to see him here in Seattle.
All right, so let's take a step back and go through a couple of things. How long did you know that you were going to be part of the broadcast? When did you find out?
So they reached out to us. It was a couple weeks in advance. They reached out to us about setting up the filming. Our PR manager was tasked with finding someone who was a good tour guide, bonus if they liked hockey, bonus if they had experience in front of the camera. So she came to my office and said, you're kind of our like chief tour guide person, right? Like when Gary Bettman came to the Space Needle back in 2019 or early 2020, right? Like I toured those kinds of people around the needle when they come. So that was already a check. And then she was like, and you kind of like hockey and you kind of know what you're doing in front of the camera. So I'd known for about a week or so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you have to like sign an NDA or something about the two players who were named who were not ultimately selected? I mean, are they just trusting you to not reveal those in the 24 hours before the draft?
Yes, I did. I did not. I think I signed something, but I think it was just a release. We were in a public part of the Space Needle, right? So people could hear us
interesting
saying the name. So, right, the other two for Philly were James Van Riemsdyk and Shane Gosisbehere. Were the other two that we recorded. Anyone who was at the top of the Space Needle on that side of the building would have heard that. And obviously we didn't draft them. So, yeah.
You mentioned Kevin Weeks. It was quite fascinating to me. That was my first time seeing him, as I have not watched the NHL Network. Like, I'm familiar with a few of the broadcasters who were involved with NBC's coverage from watching the playoffs at times. But, you know, I just assumed watching that, oh, this guy's a professional broadcaster. He's been doing it his whole life. And then to find out he had also been a longtime NHL goalie was shocking. Like, that is a multi-talented individual.
Yeah, he played for almost 25 years in the league, and he played for like seven teams. I think the longest of which was Jersey. And obviously, you know, being African-American or African-Canadian, he's, from, I think, from Toronto originally.
Yeah.
He, you know, in his time in the late 90s, early 2000s in the NHL, obviously a groundbreaker in that sense. So, no, yeah, like long playing career as goalie. We talked about hockey. He asked, you know, do you play? And we talked about the Trash Pandas a little bit. And
Well, did you mention the cup, the symmetric cup?
Did not mention the symmetric cup. Didn't want to make him jealous.
Oh, wow. You know, you talked a little bit. What was the general vibe at the expansion draft from everybody there? Great crowd.
I think folks were super excited. It was about 4,000 people. I think the vibe was just like, it was this sort of big release of there's been so many things that have happened with this team that have happened without a public event, right? In normal times.
Yeah.
The release of the name would have been a big deal. Yeah. Having the head coach would have been a big deal. There would have been, you know, a big event that fans would be invited to come to. There's just so many little milestones that have happened in the past year. Like even the name release, it was exactly a year before the entry draft. It was on July 23rd of 2020. So it's been all this time that the team has had a name, had a logo, and people just haven't been able to be in person. So it was a good first event for the Kraken. As far as the picks, it was interesting. I would say for half of the picks, the crowd was honestly looking around each other like, have you heard of this guy? And some of the folks I was there with like follow hockey a little closer, and they would know a little bit more about the picks. But in general, it was like half of the guys everyone was super stoked about. The other half folks were like, well, I don't know anything about this guy, which means I either need to learn or he's never going to play in Seattle. Right. If you look back 4 years later at the 30 players drafted by Vegas, 11 of them never played for the Golden Knights. So even as we're sitting there and they're announcing those picks, yeah, I have to think part of that in my head of like a third of these guys could never play a single game for Seattle. It's all part of the process. And but it was exciting as they were announcing picks. It's real, right? We have a team. So great atmosphere.
Yeah, that was fascinating to learn that you draft more players than you can possibly keep. I guess some of them don't count against the roster because they're in the farm system to some extent, right?
Exactly right. So we have to eventually fill AHL, American Hockey League affiliate spots too. We need a team there. And obviously for this upcoming season, we'll be splitting the Charlotte team with AHL. The Charlotte Checkers, we're splitting them with the Panthers this upcoming year. And so, yeah, we have some spots to fill there. A lot of these guys, like Alexander True, great example. He kind of bounced between the San Jose Barracuda of the AHL and the San Jose Sharks in the NHL, right? He's kind of a 50-50. He could end up playing for the Kraken. He could end up out in Charlotte this year. Right. And met players like Matty Beniers in the entry draft. He's probably going to develop in college for a little bit longer, maybe spend some time in Palm Springs and then make a Kraken debut. So yeah, we only have so many spots on the roster, and the farm system is a big part of it.
So it seems like the selection of Beniers at number two overall, that sort of had come into focus in the past week. Is the direction the Kraken were headed?
I think so. I mean, at a certain point when you have the number two pick, you just want the best available player, right? I think there was
an expansion draft, like you have needs, but you just got to be thinking long term and can't be thinking about that at this point.
Yeah, the expansion draft is all about right now. Like we need 20 to 23 guys who are ready to step on the ice opening night and actually compete. And someone in the chances of someone in the entry draft, even looking at the last couple of years, there've been players like Lafreniere and Cole Caulfield, like top picks that still need to develop even for half a season before coming up to the NHL. And so, it's all about the future. And obviously for the future, they made a great pick. If you look at the expansion draft lineup, we're going to need centers in the future, but also, you know, I would, looking at the situation, I think Matty Beniers will probably end up playing another season at Michigan. They obviously have a lot of talented players there. The number one overall pick, Owen Power, also at the University of Michigan.
I didn't realize that the top two from the same school.
Yeah, I think actually I can pull it up, but the top, I believe that three of the top four picks in the draft are all on the Michigan squad. Really stacked there, but getting to play with other elite players of that level will do them good in their development. I think it's exciting, and I think we're lucky to have Matty Beniers.
Also the first American for the Kraken, right? They did not draft any Americans in the expansion draft.
Correct. Yes. And I just double checked of the top five picks in the entry draft, three play for the University of Michigan. Owen Power, who's number one, Matty Beniers at number two, and Kent Johnson, number three. Matty Beniers, the only American of those three playing for Michigan.
UConn women's basketball-esque. So this is not it for the Kraken. Now we turn our attention to free agency, which opens up on Wednesday. And one of the things the Kraken did accomplish by not taking some of those bigger names with the bigger salaries, Carey Price in particular, is they've given themselves a lot of cap space to work with in free agency here. I'm looking at Spotrac.com, which has the Kraken with the fourth most cap space of any team right now. How aggressive should we expect them to be in utilizing that in free agency?
I think it's going to be an exciting week. That's coming off of last week. That's hard to believe, but right, there's so many talented players out there that we could make such a huge difference for us right away. There's a couple goaltenders, Tuukka Rask for Boston, and Grubauer with the Avalanche. If we need some experienced goaltenders who have played more than 80 games in the NHL to come in on day one and sort of build a team around, I think free agency is the place for us to pick that up. On a personal level, Dougie Hamilton from the Carolina Hurricanes is probably my favorite player available in free agency. He's a defenseman, and off the ice, he's just a total goofball. He's a great personality. There aren't a lot of big personalities in hockey. The Hurricanes are full of them. And obviously Ron Francis in his former role with the Hurricanes is very familiar with Dougie Hamilton. With that being said, he's a defenseman. We have a lot of great defensemen that we had picked up in the expansion draft. So you don't want to waste his time or waste the dough, but it'll be interesting to see which way the wind blows. The other thing, the Minnesota Wild cut loose a couple big names over the past couple weeks in Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. And so they're a little older, but I think we're kind of looking for a little bit of that veteran presence as we head into the first year, especially with so many young guys coming out. But right, if you're Tristan, you're clearly just going straight for Alex Ovechkin. So anything could happen.
In general, how much movement is there of star players in NHL free agency? Like we're used to NBA free agency where you sort of expect that, although we're probably going to have a relatively, well, maybe we won't have that quiet of an offseason, but not as many of the star free agents this year because everybody signed extensions. What's that situation like? Is it more like Ovechkin's where the guys are just going to stay, you know, in his case with the Capitals forever, or is there a lot of star players going to new markets and free agency?
In general, there's not a lot of movements. Guys are pretty loyal. I think most of the shocking movements come at the trade deadline, which is a technicality because technically the NHL pumps up this sort of trade deadline right before the push for the playoffs start. Even though I believe there's not technically a deadline, but That's typically where you see some of the odd movements and sort of surprising movements of guys shuffling around. My experience following the league, you don't see a lot of weird free agent moves like that, but obviously they happen, right? It's not, people don't stay with the same teams for their entire careers, but I think a lot of the more surprising moves are at the trade deadline as opposed to free agency.
That's interesting. So kind of opposite the NBA, where you usually see bigger trades in the offseason than the trade deadline. All right, well, the other piece of the puzzle that we got last week, as I mentioned earlier, was the schedule, with the Kraken opening up their season with a 5-game road trip, giving some more time for the completion of Climate Pledge Arena. And they're going to open up against they're not exactly the expansion brethren, I guess expansion cousins maybe, because they're different years, but the same sort of round of expansion, in the Vegas Golden Knights on Tuesday, October 12th, against that successful expansion franchise. Is that something we're expecting to be a rivalry with those two teams?
I think so, right? I think especially for Seattle fans, something that we've been having to deal with for 2 years now at least, is Vegas had all the success in their first year. They went all the way to the Cup final. And so I feel like that's the measuring stick we're always going to be held up against, that I want to win a Cup before Vegas so that we can always hold that over them. Same with Vancouver. I'm super excited. I think they will always kind of be our sort of twin or cousin franchise, in the same way that, Minnesota and Columbus are the same thing. When you come in the same era or the same time frame as another team, you're always going to kind of be, whether you like it or not, measured against their success, because you've been around for the same amount of time. And in the case of the Knights, we had the same rules when we came in as far as how we drafted. So I think it's just shows how the front office handles the situation compared to each other. But yeah, that opener is going to be great. The 5 games on the road, I think, are great to get, it's basically started out west and then they go on kind of traditional swing for a road trip, right? They head to Nashville, Columbus, Philly, and New Jersey. For a team getting bonded, put together, a staff coming together for the first time, starting on the road. And we actually have back-to-back games on that road too, Philly and New Jersey on back-to-back nights. Those are things that are going to come up in the season. You got to be ready for it. So I like that we're doing it right away. And then of course, coming home for the home opener on October 23rd against the Canucks. That is going to be one of the biggest nights in Seattle sports history, hands down.
Yeah, we talked about that rivalry with the Canucks the last time you were on, and how meaningful that's going to be, especially with a lot of, Seattle fans who kind of rooted for Vancouver for a period of time because they didn't have a team of their own, and now they do. It was an interesting decision to me because I feel like a lot of the times you sort of save that one and have two marquee games. Like, you have whoever on opening night is going to be a thrilling game because it's the first game in franchise history, first game at Climate Pledge Arena, and then save Vancouver for later in the season. But the NHL deciding to kind of put all the chips in on that one, which is going to be just a massive night, is the derby match against Vancouver.
Well, the one thing that I hope doesn't happen, right, is the opening game for the Golden Knights was against the Arizona Coyotes. That was their home opener. And that was the league saying it's going to be Arizona because they're going to have this awesome rivalry in the desert. And they tried to sort of force it to happen.
They tried to make Fetch happen.
Yeah, and Fetch didn't happen, right? So, no, Vancouver, it's obviously a lot more natural. I'm really excited for the second home game against Montreal, a rematch of the 1917 Stanley Cup, which the Seattle Metropolitans became the first American team to win the Stanley Cup. And, right, obviously, like, going through the schedule, it was like a dream come true for me, like looking at all the different matchups, some junior hockey players I love following coming to town. Even the season closer at home is against San Jose, who I think will have a pretty natural rivalry with as well. And is another one of those teams that a lot of Seattle folks have connections to or rooted for. So a lot of great dates on the schedule. Another couple that jump out. I mean, we play Vancouver on New Year's Day at home.
Oh, I didn't realize that. There
you go. So Vancouver, New Year's Day. The Kraken will play on Hockey Night in Canada from Seattle 3 times in the season. So it's, coast to coast broadcast on CBC and in Canada. It's basically the biggest game of the week. They'll have one in December against Edmonton, New Year's Day against Vancouver, and then a late season April game against Calgary. So just sort of, you know, big night, big expectations, sort of the brightest lights in the league is Hockey Night in Canada, which is super exciting. And obviously the thing that I loved following on Twitter as far as schedule went, people would be like, what's happening in February? There's only one home game in February. I think folks forgot that the Winter Olympics are taking place.
It doesn't seem like they should be this close to the Summer Olympics. It's very
correct. Long. It's unnatural. So yeah, there's a 30-day gap in home games from January 25th to February 24th for the Olympics in Beijing, which the NHL is back in after taking a break from Pyeongchang in 2018.
Well, tentatively, not for sure back in, but definitely considering that.
Everything's pointing in that direction.
I mean, everything TBD at this point during a pandemic still, but coincidentally, the Kraken book begin and end that break against the Boston Bruins, visiting Boston on February 1st before hosting them in that February 24th return to Climate Pledge Arena that you mentioned.
And with the schedule, I think just for fans, right, getting familiar with how it works, you play every single, and this is new as of 4 years ago with the shuffling of the divisions, you play every single team at home once and you play every single team on the road once. So you know as a fan that if you want to see Toronto play or you want to see Ottawa, you have a team like Carolina. Like, I love following Carolina. I think they're a lot of fun. They're a preview into what our team could be like with Ron Francis at the helm. If you want to see them play, you know they're coming to town at least once a year. And then you play your division, the Pacific Division will play more often at home. So that's your Vancouver, LA, Calgary, Edmonton, Vegas. So just when you're looking at the schedule and you're like, wow, like we're only playing the, you know, Chicago Blackhawks one time. Is that normal? Like, yeah. And you better believe, like, anyone who wants to see the Blackhawks, it's their one time to get tickets to that game. So just as you're reading the schedule, something to keep in mind.
Well, I mean, these are going to be the toughest ticket in town, presumably next year. I mean, the wait list for season tickets was enormous, the initial demand. And I think now that was when it was just the idea of a team. Now that you've actually got a team, you've got a logo, we finally have players, the anticipation only building.
Absolutely. I cannot wait for that home opener on the 23rd. It's going to be out of this world.
So a big week for the Kraken, some more to come with NHL free agency. And we are 2.5 months away at this point from the start of the inaugural season for the Seattle Kraken. And it's coming. Well, thanks so much, Randy, for rejoining us to help break this down. And congrats again on being part of the broadcast.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I feel a lot more informed about the Kraken now after that conversation.
Me too.
You're probably substantially more informed. Let's turn our attention to our search for Seattle's best fried chicken, which took us to ST Hooligans in Freelard this week. And I told you that we could connect back to the beer because it was when I was driving to Stoop Brewing to meet a friend not long ago that I forget which street that is. Is it still 36th?
Leary Avenue.
And I'm stopped at a light and I look over and see Washington's best fried chicken.
This is just old fashioned advertising. A big ass sign on the front of the building. You see that and you're like, well, fuck, I need to try that.
Somehow, right? ST Hooligans never came up in my Google searches or various.
It's pretty weird because you look on Yelp and it's number one on Yelp when you search fried chicken in the city of Seattle.
This is what we've learned is that I did not use Yelp at all in this
search.
I've
done this before.
But Yelp determined that they had Washington State's best fried chicken last July. Here's their methodology. This is an all-time list of the best fried chicken in every state, according to Yelp. We identified businesses in the restaurants and food categories with a large concentration of reviews mentioning fried chicken. Didn't say anything about chicken strips. Then ranked those spots using a number of factors, including the total volume and ratings of reviews mentioning fried chicken. When available, all businesses on this list have a passing health score or a score of greater than a B80 as of July 1st, 2020. So there you go. Good job, ST Hooligans. This is a location.
Although I'm looking at fried chicken in the city of Seattle, and I do not see it in the top 10 anymore. I swear to God, this is like a friggin' moving target when it comes to fried chicken in Seattle.
Very odd. But this place, even though it's an all-time list, not around
that
long.
We have not been to Mr. Chicken yet, have we?
That is next week's plan stop. Estee Hooligans opened in January 2019, so still relatively new location, obviously a little over a year before the pandemic altered things a bit. So we went last Sunday, got some takeout chicken, and took it actually across the street from Stoop to Urban Family Brewing, which was quite a great experience in its own right.
A cool 5 stars for Estee Hooligans. It is 12th here, but 5 stars across the board.
Well, there we go. So we got one of the 3-piece, the Washington's Best Fried Chicken, the original, the regular version, and then also the what they call the Spicy-Addle version, which is their spicy, and I assume means it's spicy by Seattle standards.
Yes.
What were your first thoughts?
Fried chicken in Seattle has a new name. And that name is Estee Hooligans.
Wow.
No, I don't know. I just kind of wanted to say that.
Oh, okay.
But this was, it was, put it in the bracket right there. We don't have a lot of room in the bracket, but it is in the bracket immediately. I don't care what seed you put it at, right? It has to be in there. I would consider this, especially in the spicy fried chicken. Again, the most fun thing that we do during the search for Seattle's best fried chicken is seeing the different types of fried chicken that you come across along the way, right? And so I open up the box and something was dripping from the box. And I'm just like, what the fuck is this? What is in this box that could possibly
be dripping? What's in the box?
And I open it up and it's a wet spicy fried chicken. It's very different than what you think of when you think of like Nashville style hot Correct. Chicken, right? It is not. It's spicy from a glaze rather than spicy from the heat that's in the breading necessarily. And it is a totally different experience. They even do like the breast is a boneless breast. This is a very different fried chicken than most of the other competitors in this competition. But it is phenomenal.
I would say that the spicy, the way they did it, as you mentioned, it sort of reminded me more of the Jack's spicy.
Yes, very similar to the Jack's. But yeah. Less, it's almost less like, I feel like the Jack's glaze is like a little bit more like a honey glaze.
Like it looks tangy.
Tangy.
Yeah.
This is a different glaze. Like it gets on your hands, but it's not like my preference is for this. We have Jack's in the bracket right now. Are they on the outside looking in? Wow, I cannot believe that.
Well, they have no bones.
You gotta have bones.
I don't think any of the locations that did not have bone-in fried chicken have made the bread. Maybe no, I don't know if any of them have.
And so this is the breast didn't have bones.
Did,
but
did you see this tweet by the way? When I was making a joke about goalkeeper
yeah. every way. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
Amazing from Undi Galaga at Cascadia Pirate. Amazing how quickly this podcast became anti-tender in almost any situation.
They have no bones. I didn't think about that. So Jax is basically out for not even being fried chicken. It's a chicken strip joint.
It is. I mean, very good chicken strips, but not in the bracket.
Wow. Man, this bracket has gotten harsh.
I mean, Bakabak, which is great. No bone-in chicken. Not in the... Well,
those were like
our
first
wings.
Two locations we went to. They were, and yes. As the search continued, they became eliminated.
That will happen.
But the Estee Hooligans chicken, it was just... honestly, the whole experience was phenomenal. And again... It's very nice when you can have this fried chicken on a hot summer day, sitting at a bar drinking a fresh beer from a brewery. Like, it's kind of impossible to compete with as far as an experience goes.
And that is the one thing I wonder about as we go through this bracket. Like, there's been such a variety of ways we've consumed this chicken over the course
yeah,
of this
we've had it from
search.
The floor of your car.
Also strips, also not in the bracket. I feel like we have to find a way to get everything as fresh as possible when
I mean,
we're going through the
tournament. Mrs. Fantasy Genius was like, it's a long way from Fairwood, Washington to Freelard. It is actually the longest point between any 2 points on Earth between Fairwood. Did you know this? And Freelard, Washington.
Wow. Amazing. I thought the Olympics in Tokyo were farther away, yeah. But no, apparently not.
Especially driving all the way to Ballard. I had to drive through Freelard. I saw the sign you were talking about, and you see it, and you're just like, yeah, give me that chicken.
I mean, it was a no-brainer as soon as I saw
right?
that.
Right? Randy should take note. Look, his marketing at the space, you know, all he's got is a giant building. Give me a sign. Give me a sign that says...
Washington's best landmark? What? No.
Then I'll go up the space.
Well, Jan's already going. We got her.
Jan's got it covered for me. But the point is, I told Mrs. Fantasy Genius, I was like, I can't do that. I'm like, this is a competitor for Seattle's Best Fried Chicken. I can't just wait and let it sit in Al's car for 40 minutes on the way to Fairwood, Washington, because that would be a disservice to this incredible fried chicken that's being made at SD Hooligans.
I mean, I already thought that within the span of from the first piece I ate, which was, so I had two pieces of the original and just one piece of the spicy.
Are we comfortable in the finals? Because we've done this with some other searches where it's basically like, we're taking the best item on the menu.
I think the original was better.
Wow.
I didn't think the spicy was bad, but I preferred the original.
That honestly, that makes me feel even better about this perspective. I don't agree with you, but the fact that somebody who's eaten as much chicken as you've eaten recently could make this argument or could have the perspective that the original was better makes me think that I'm right about this.
That it needs to be in the bracket?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not questioning that.
And then I think it might be, it's up there.
The first piece I had, I was like, whoa, this is a serious contender because it was so juicy and flavorful. I had the thigh first. I had the breast last. And I think even within the span between eating those two pieces and having some hush puppies in between, which were top notch.
Let me just break this down for you because that was its timing was the same for me as well. But I'll tell you what the difference is between the thigh and the chicken breast.
Is it bones?
It's bones. Because it's just like a big.
Are the bones locking in the flavor?
Yeah. Has this just clicked for you?
A little bit.
I'm telling you right now that a big chunk of just chicken is not as good as having the. I think the chicken thigh maybe is the perfect cut of chicken.
Oh, 100%. Without question.
It is the premier piece of.
I mean, I feel that in any circumstance, like, you know, when I'm making boneless, skinless chicken at home, it's always the thigh.
Can we do a ranking right now, right now
of chicken pieces?
We've got of drumstick, breast, thigh, wing, with the tip.
I think I might go thigh, leg, breast, drumstick.
You said leg. I said
yes.
And they had two totally different rankings.
Thigh, drumstick, breast, wing.
You said two things that were exactly the same, and they were second and fourth.
I understand. I was trying to say wing.
So what was it? What was your? I was too distracted.
Wing was the last one.
Trying to figure out what you were saying.
Thigh, drumstick, breast, wing.
That's the ranking.
Okay, there we go. That's the official. It's a consensus.
And the wing, although there are a lot of bones, you don't get as much meat. The thigh is the perfect meat-to-bone ratio. Breast is too much meat. Wing is too much bone. Thigh is perfect. Leg is perfect.
It's the Goldilocks of
it is
chicken parts.
That's it. So I think that's the issue. It wasn't necessarily the time. I think it was more just the cut of chicken.
And maybe if I had had the spicy thigh, I would feel differently about things entirely.
Because the first one that I had was the spicy thigh, and I was just, that was when I thought of fried chicken as a new name in Seattle, and it's SD Hooligans. Jotted that down in the old mental docket. I was like,
that's a real insight into this podcast.
I was thinking it when I drove by. I was like, I think this would be a fun thing to say.
I gotta say, I hope that Mr. Chicken is not that good because we're already out of room to practice.
We got a lot of problems. The college football playoff. It's gonna be a 16 team fried chicken bracket.
We don't have time for that before the live show. We're still saving the day for September 18th. Hopefully the location we're thinking will be open soon and we can announce this at some point.
Your booking agent better get to work.
Seriously, I'm considering firing them. Should we get back to Seattle sports?
We didn't even give it a rating. We got to give
it
a rating.
Oh, you're right. We didn't give it a rating. No, I was going to go 91.
I think it's a 93.
Okay.
This was an
put it solidly in the bracket.
Fried chicken experience.
Yeah, I'm curious. I am really excited to go back and revisit some of these places, especially ones that, you know, we did mildly fresh, but not all the way fresh. So
to me, Fats is the one that didn't get a fair shake.
That was in our bracket, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's in the bracket.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you ate it the next day, right?
Or maybe even multiple days later. But when you look fried chicken in Seattle, the number one location that comes up is Fats Fried Chicken and Waffles.
There you go.
Followed by Mr. Chicken, number two.
Mr. Chicken is so hot right now.
The chances of us of Mr. Chicken being in this bracket is just, it's pretty high. I see fried Korean chicken shop hot dogs.
But I don't know, you know, they made, I don't know what they're doing as far as bone-in fried chicken there.
I can see bone-in fried chicken literally right there on the picture, and I want to eat it right this second.
Is that bone-in fried chicken?
Those are chicken legs.
All right.
They're like little drumsticks.
Those might be the wings. Oh, what's going on in this Mariners game before we get to the hot takes?
Oh, yeah. I pulled it up.
What's the story here?
Oh, my God. I think they just won. Dylan Moore, first career Grand Slam.
Wow. Something.
It's the bottom of the eighth, so they haven't won.
Something is definitely happening here.
This is a take this for your one-run games over here.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not a one-run game. If you could do that, you might have a run differential better than minus 52.
God, I hate you. I'm just trying to sit over here, podcast, look at photos of Mr. Chicken.
Well, I'm trying to get ready for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
Look, there's some things that you won't let me talk about on this podcast.
Oh, dear.
You said they were too hot!
Oh, boy.
Look, the Rams, this week, I heard Andy Benoit as a special assistant. And do you want to hear my unfiltered take on that?
No.
Do you?
Maybe offline.
Well, sorry. But you can hear about how the Mariners took 3 of 4 from the hated Oakland A's this last weekend. We hate them, right?
You kind of like Moneyball.
You know what else is happening in the world?
What's that?
Well, a growing group of rank-and-file House Republicans wants House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy to punish Representatives Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger for serving on a committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. And do you want to know my take on that? Well, that won't happen on this podcast. But you can hear about how rookies Jared Kelenic scored the game-winning run on Saturday night on a wild pitch.
There you go.
And the phenomenal start of fellow rookie Logan Gilbert on the mound. In other news, the U.S. men's basketball team, led by Damian Lillard and Kevin Durant, lost early Sunday in a surprise upset to the Evan Fournier-led French squad. And let me tell you, I have strong feelings about this. But you won't let me talk about that. Instead, I can talk about how the Mariners are now just 1.5 games out of the second wild card spot, and Dylan Moore hit a grand slam to put the team up 11-8 just moments ago. They are heading to the playoffs, as presumably at some point heard this year on the Pelton Cast.
I mean, look, all takes have been heard. That's the beauty of this segment. I mean, if they win tonight, they'll only be a game back of the A's. Do you want to know what their Fangraphs playoff odds were coming into tonight's game?
I looked them up yesterday because I was like, I'm getting after it. I'm getting kind of hyped here. They were 4% yesterday, and I think they're 5%
today.
They're
up to 5. You're telling me there's a chance.
Oh, it's Dusty Baker. Dusty, somebody's been ejected? What's going on?
Oh, you've got the game pulled up here?
They're bringing Dusty. That's Dusty Baker, right? He's the Astros manager.
That seems like something I may have heard at some point in the winter, that was a thing.
Oh, if you're going to be upset, Astros, you should have not let Dylan Moore hit a grand slam.
Yeah.
Yeah, Astros catcher, whose name I don't know.
Oh, boy. That's great trash talk. Astros catcher, whose name I don't know.
He's got his hands on the umpire's shoulder. Something very exciting is that we've got conversations happening. Oh no, the Astros pitcher got ejected.
There it is.
He must have had an illegal substance on his hat.
Oh man.
You think we're talking foreign? So I think the catcher's name might be Maldonado.
Or did he get?
Okay, they're just showing the J.P. Crawford at bat.
Well, okay.
Oh, I have to see what happened. It's like a pitch slightly inside. right?
Should I, you know?
Oh, he plunked him.
I know you don't, you don't listen to this anyway. Should I just do the Sounders segment while you're watching this?
I'm telling you what, the Mariners are fun. It is pretty, this is, I think, the first time J.P. Crawford got plunked and then the Astros pitcher got ejected. This is the first time, literally since the year 2001, that the Mariners have been fun.
I mean, I think that some of the Nelson Cruz teams were fun, weren't they?
No, no.
All right, if you say so.
I was correct that Dusty Baker is their manager.
So the Sounders, as expected, they rotated their squad midweek at Austin in between those two big matches with Sporting Kansas City looming on Sunday. We did not expect that that was going to include playing the second youngest lineup in MLS history with five teenagers, including a 16-year-old, Reed Baker Whiting, who we talked about earlier this year, was born after the American Office debuted, and a 15-year-old Tacoma Defiance call-up, Obed Vargas, who became the third youngest player to appear in an MLS match. Also, third goalkeeper Spencer Ritchie made his Sounders debut, the first Sounders keeper, as I noted on Twitter, not named Stefan since June 2019 when Brian Meredith started their U.S. Open Cup loss to Portland.
Oh my God, Dylan Moore. This was a Rui Diaz-style strike.
Yeah, with the match scoreless early in the second half, Brian Schmetzer brought on Raul Rui Diaz to go for the 3 points in the win despite the resting play. Rui Diaz rewarded him with a golazo chipping the keeper from nearly 41 yards out for the
that
only
was,
goal
it was
back.
Incredible. I didn't realize that he came in as a sub.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you look at the roster or the lineup for the match and you're just like,
we're mailing this one in.
But then Rui Diaz is one of the best players in all of MLS.
Yes.
So the stark contrast between literal children. I have children that there's certain people like LaMelo Ball is closer in age to, I think, my youngest child than he is to me. But like, I think I can carry on a conversation with LaMelo Ball. Like we're not that far off. A 16-year-old?
I think you've had conversations with 15-year-olds
before. But, like,
before.
we're getting close to actual children.
I mean, certainly very plausible that I could have children who are 15 and 16 years old.
Oh, my God.
Like, that would not even be out of the ordinary for me to have children.
It wouldn't even be
age.
An interesting TikTok. If they were like, my dad had me when I was, what would the age be?
23.
Yeah, that wouldn't even be an interesting TikTok.
No.
I would flip right through it.
Yeah, this was a remarkable performance. The kids are all right. And Rui Diaz, such a special player and a special play. And there's nothing better, again, as I tweeted, in soccer than chipping the keeper.
Oh, yeah.
Austin FC had an equalizer on a free kick overturned by VAR for offsides. Oh, we are lifelong.
VAR.
Lifelong VAR.
Toast to VAR.
Always loved VAR. Well, an apparent Rui Diaz second goal was also called back for offsides in that one as it ended 1-0 to the Sounders. The Sounders got Shane O'Neill back from an injury off the bench on Sunday. We're a little bit deeper. Javier Arriaga missed that Austin game due to suspension and was back in the starting lineup, but they struggled in this one, giving up two goals in the first half and a third to finish off the game after Freddie Montero's 50th goal with the Sounders offered some hope of a comeback. Sporting Kansas City now 2 points back in the Western Conference of the Sounders with a match in hand to even in points per match as we reached the season's midway point.
J.P. Crawford got thrown out. He got picked off.
Enough to throw it out of the game, though. Nearly a full week off for the Sounders, which will be well needed before taking on San Jose, which is tied for last in the West with 0.93 points per match. Alex Roldan should be back for that one. And then probably before we record again, another midweek match next Wednesday versus FC Dallas, also part of that four-way tie for last in the Western Conference. So a chance for the Sounders, even if they remain shorthanded, to pick up some points in those two. Well, Rain got a 2-0 win Saturday at the Orlando Pride. Jessica Fishlock and Ziara King with goals as they got that road victory, keeping a clean sheet. All right, you told me to put on the rundown to talk about this Oklahoma and Texas news. Pac-12 Media Day is coming up Tuesday in Las Vegas for football. We know, I thought you were going to throw this into your takes you weren't allowed to get off on this podcast.
I saw it in the notes.
WSU coach Nick Olenich not in attendance because he is not vaccinated.
Is he the only coach in the Pac-12?
He did not attend, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. of.
Yeah.
God, just the... People, what are we doing here? Go to the next part. And I'll deliver this take because it's encompassing the whole thing.
Oklahoma and Texas have notified the Big 12 that they will not renew their media rights deal that expires in 2025, a precursor to those schools possibly moving to the SEC.
So this wouldn't be until 2025?
Well, it could happen sooner if the Big 12 were to break apart and is part of this move to super conferences. So, say, if those schools were to join the Pac-12.
What are the super conferences, though? All of the teams are in the SEC?
That's not football, a super conference. That's pretty much it, yes. I mean, we just break off football. Like, why do we have football in the same school conference as all these other sports? Football is totally different than, like, you don't need men's tennis to be in the same conference as your fucking football team. Like, they're not related at all.
You're marching down the right path.
It's to not have college sports.
But the only possible way to respond to all of this information and everything that we have seen from, let's just say football, college football mostly, to a certain extent basketball, college sports in general though, is to stop paying attention to college sports. Like, what is the positive aside from tailgating? I'll give you tailgating. What is the positive that comes from your life by paying attention to college sports? Because every single story that has to do with college sports is ultimately bad. And all of these things are negative. There's no overarching powers that be, right? It's attached to these colleges. And in many scenarios, like, the football program is more important at the University of Texas and the University of Oklahoma than the education itself, right? Like, the way that these things have been set up is completely fucking bonkers.
Backwards.
So, why are we paying attention? Like, what are we gaining from this? And it's all pointed toward the SEC, where literally education has nothing to do with it, right? Like,
have you not seen those SEC graduate badges on the jerseys?
Oh, that sounds nice. I'm not a fucking, like, need to be about the education person here. It's more just like, these two things are completely unrelated. Just build a minor league for football.
Yeah.
Split off completely. And it really is like, it's money from old white boosters that are going into this. People in Texas and Oklahoma who have lots of money, fucking, who are there pushing these schools to be where football matters more in the SEC.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know what else to say.
There's no positive to be gained from it. And the whole system is structured such that at the SEC, because there's a power void at the top of NCAA football, the SEC is going to control what college football looks like for the next perpetuity.
Yeah, that's true.
The only way to respond to this, and I don't even think this does not equal in power, if the Pac-12 and Big Ten, which again would be bonkers, joined as a conference. If you took two completely different parts of the country, granted the West Coast is a very large part of the country as opposed to the other parts of the country, right. But like,
it's already geographically diffuse.
If you join those two it's literally the only way to look at it. And then you have schools where there are players who are not going to get the same opportunities because they're having to play for a team that's not in one of the super conferences. But there's no purpose.
That's always been the case. There's always been some divide between the power conferences and the non-power conferences.
But there was more of an equity to it. And now you're talking about the SEC being not the most powerful. It's already the most powerful conference. But you're talking about the SEC being the most powerful conference by tenfold. Like, adding Texas, adding the state of... They already had Texas A&M, but if you add the University of Texas, the most important school in the state of Texas, it now would control basically the entire Southeast all the way into Texas, and really the college football in general.
Pretty much anywhere below the Mason-Dixon line.
So, I just don't see if you're the incoming Pac-12 commissioner, how you're supposed to respond to this. And I think pairing up the Big Ten is the only way to ensure that your schools are not left behind. But also, the other way is to not care at all. And I think that college football being a regional thing makes a lot more sense. In fact, I'm so close to being at your fucking who cares about the college football playoff perspective.
There we go.
Like, the whole thing is fucking stupid. Why? This is not... None of the shit matters. No one cares who wins bowl games. No one cares who wins the college football playoff. This isn't the Super Bowl. There's no history involved. If we're being honest with ourselves, all of it is to funnel money back to I guess not even money necessarily, right? It's to funnel ego back to extraordinarily wealthy white people in the Southeast.
Yes, exactly. Reflected glory.
For them to have garden parties or whatever, and Clay Bennett to feel like his team was better than somebody else's team, and give a couple of nudges while they toast over their oil money. Like, I'm sorry, but the whole thing is ridiculous. And the fun part about professional sports is the equity of it to a certain extent, right? If every single year in the NFL, a handful, like four teams went to the Super Bowl every single year, it wouldn't be fun to watch. And college football is not fun to watch.
I think there's a whole sport that kind of works that way. And
soccer?
It's quite popular, yes.
Yeah. But occasionally you get Middle Eastern billionaires.
Okay. You've replaced the oil money with the Midwestern oil money with Middle Eastern
with oil money.
Oil money. Oh, no. Oh, it all comes back to oil.
There's a sense of history involved in soccer. Like, you watch soccer and there's all these different competitions. And you're like when you see the British national team playing,
I guess the difference here is, you know, the fan anger actually did manage to stop the proposed Super League in Europe, but there's no indication that there's going to be, like, fans are going to be in an uproar at Texas and Oklahoma over their teams moving to the SEC.
They're pro.
It seems so.
The fans for the University of Kansas football are not going to be really swaying things here. Sorry.
Well, yeah. Kansas basketball are pretty upset.
Plus Nick Rolovich, why do we pay attention to college football? And
it's,
like,
it's a fair question.
The fucking Washington State team is just their COVID outbreak waiting to happen.
I mean, hopefully many of the players themselves are vaccinated. It certainly does not set good leadership in that process if you're the coach. It doesn't seem to be consistent with any sorts of ideals of competing your hardest, doing everything to protect the team. Any sorts of motto like that doesn't seem to be whatsoever reflected by that particular decision.
I hope they have to forfeit a game this year because of this decision.
Well, happier news on the Seahawks front in this.
I'm pro mandatory vaccines as well. I do not believe in personal choice when it comes to vaccines.
As Third Pelton brother Michael Sean Dugar reported Sunday, that the Seahawks have more than 90% of players who have begun the vaccination process.
There it is.
Tom Pelissero of NFL Network reported Monday that 84% of all NFL players have initiated that process, with 10 teams, including the Seahawks, above 90%. And I think that is, we talked about this last year with the Seahawks not having any players in quarantine at any point all season or test positive. That's the leadership that Pete Carroll is bringing to the table. That man loses.
Who stays
always
competing? Who stays competing?
Peter Clay Carroll. No matter how old, the ageless Peter Clay Carroll.
Right? And of all people, when you think about it, if there was a coach who you would say maybe they would be skeptical about this,
okay.
It's not Pete Carroll, though.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I thought there's a certain strain of contrarian thinking that has been associated with Pete Carroll at times. I think it's overblown, but it is out there.
Pete Carroll, he just does the damn thing, right? You're talking about if there was a different coach, somebody like Tyler Lockett may not be vaccinated. But having that leadership, this is exactly the opposite of what Nick Rolovich is doing.
Yep.
Right? Providing that leadership, getting to 90%+ of players vaccinated on the team is an impressive feat. And you look at Pete, you look at Russell Wilson, you look at the players that are on the Seahawks.
Russ definitely deserves credit.
And that's what they're pushing. And this is the most important thing that they could be doing right now. Winning and losing, whatever. You're trying to keep people safe out here. Like, this is so much more important than winning and losing a football game. Look, you let them run the ball. Because what Pete Carroll is doing...
Going to pull out this quip in week 7.
It doesn't matter. What Pete Carroll is doing ultimately is he is making young people's lives better. He is out there enriching young people's lives.
Wow.
Is he not?
Was he doing that when he was in college football?
I think so. Yeah. I saw 60 Minutes about it.
Oh, gosh.
It was the moment where I was like, fuck, I guess I like Pete Carroll. I was like, I kind of hate him, but I guess I love Pete Carroll.
That, I believe, was his A Better LA Foundation, which now also exists as A Better Seattle.
And there you go. I didn't see Steve Sarkisian doing that.
I also did not see that.
So... That's competing right there. That's what I'm telling you. He is saying we're not going to be out there losing a game because of a COVID outbreak.
Absolutely.
We're not going to forfeit because of this. We're going to be competing our hardest.
I mean, my hot take is I don't think anyone is actually forfeiting. I think I don't want to call these policies toothless, but I think they are a scare tactic.
Come on. You know Wazoo is going to forfeit a game. You think Wazoo plays their full schedule? No fucking way.
I don't know.
Let's just say if there's any team in the Pac-12 that were to forfeit a game.
It's still required for people on campus. So I do think a high percentage of their players will likely get vaccinated.
That's to live on campus or to attend school on campus?
I'm not sure exactly what the distinction is. Now, there you can, you know, claim...
So you can go and be one of the highest paid employees on campus.
You can claim...
And possibly even... Do you think he's the highest paid employee of Washington State University?
Oh, yeah.
So you can't... I mean, I'm sure that... You cannot
Jimmy
attend
Lake is
classes.
The, Jimmy Lake is the only employee of the state of Washington paid more than Nick Rolovich. There's no doubt about it.
You can not attend classes at Washington State University, but you can
You have
be
to have an exception.
Highest paid individual in the entire university and not be vaccinated. The standards that the head coach, that the highest paid employee of the university is held to, are not as high as a fucking incoming freshman who wants to attend classes in
again,
person.
It's not different standards because those people are allowed to individually declare their, you know, intent not to do it as well.
He couldn't declare his intent not to do it.
He did.
You mean, and do what? What do they do instead? Take online classes?
I'm not exactly
Nick Rolovich
sure
should coach from online. Nick Rolovich should not be allowed onto campus.
People
at
who opt
Stadium.
Out will need to wear masks and socially distance.
That's it?
Here was the statement from President Kirk Schultz. Washington State University expects all students, faculty, staff, and volunteers to be fully vaccinated before the start of the fall semester. As the state's land-grant research university, WSU has an obligation to serve the public good and promote the healthy and safety of its communities. The science clearly shows that the COVID-19 vaccine nearly eliminates the chances of death or serious illness related to a COVID-19 infection and is a crucial element in protecting public health locally and worldwide. Washington State University respects the right of individuals to decide whether to get vaccinated. WSU has instituted an exemption process for those who have medical or non-medical reasons for not receiving the vaccine. Those requesting an exemption will be required to wear a mask and maintain physical distancing and may be subject to other public health measures when on WSU property.
Okay, including Martin Stadium. So, when Nick Rolovich is on that sideline, he better be distanced from every player and the fucking mask better be over his nose. If the mask is under his chin, it's a violation of school rules. What do you have to say about that?
I'm not defending Nick Rolovich here. I'm just saying it is
so offensive that you would accept this job, this position as head coach of Washington State University, take this money, and then not even be willing to be vaccinated. It's offensive. Is what it is. And it's offensive to taxpayers. We're taxpayers of Washington State, right? This money is going to Nick Rolovich. Our tax money is going to Nick Rolovich. Is that not true?
On some indirect level, yes.
To endanger people in the community. And to help spread, to continue the spread of variants that are endangering people who have 10 to 15 children who can't be vaccinated. This is what we're living with. It's fucking bullshit.
I'm sure that Washington State is exploring its legal options with regards to Coach Rolovich.
You think they are?
I'm sure that they must have done their due diligence about it.
Do you think this is a fireable offense? Are you saying because it could be a fireable offense, but they can't be, they'd still owe him all of his salary?
I think it's a different decision if he would be, if you could fire him for cause as opposed to if you were firing him not for cause.
You think they would do it?
I don't know. I have no idea for sure if they would do it. I just think they've had to have. You've got to have run out that ground ball by this point. I mean, we've seen it in the NFL where coaches are either losing their jobs or not coaching this season because of their unwillingness.
We have to get back to the feel-good Seattle Mariners.
-56 this season. Now up to a -49 run differential.
You like that? Don't ask about the vaccination percentage of the Mariners.
Oh boy. Speaking of, it's not public money, but so anyway, the Seahawks begin training camp Wednesday. Players report Tuesday, tomorrow, as we record this, literally minutes away.
Hello.
As we record this, I guess everything.
You think they report at midnight?
Well, the Tuesday is minutes away. Also, everything's minutes away when you think about it.
If it was the Cincinnati Bengals, they might be released at midnight.
Ian Rappaport of NFL Network reported Monday that Jamal Adams is expected to report, even though his contract extension is not complete. Rappaport also said on Inside Training Camp Live that although the sides are not close at all right now, he expects a deal to get done. Previously, Rappaport and Mike Garofalo of NFL Network indicated last week that the Seahawks are hoping to keep Bobby Wagner as their highest paid defender, which would set an $18 million average annual value ceiling on an Adams extension.
How would that rate for a safety?
The current highest average annual value, Justin Simmons at 15.25.
I was going to say, I thought it was quite a bit
lower. So there's still room for them to exceed that dramatically and leave Bobby Wagner as their highest paid defender.
Jamal Adams will be the highest paid safety of all time.
Oh, I mean, there's no question if there is an extension for him that it will set the market.
I don't think there's an if. Just like Jamal Adams is going to be extended.
I mean, I don't think it's 100% chance. You'll give it like a 97% chance. Like, there's some chance they could just tag him.
I suppose so. I don't think with everything they gave up for Jamal Adams that they're not going to figure it out.
That's why I give it a 97% chance.
All right. But if he ends up at
3% chance is that the entire NFL season is canceled.
Oh, not happening.
I do know that's not happening. They didn't do it last year.
I was going to say, they were fans in the stadiums last year.
Oh, boy.
I think Jamal's handling it super well.
I mean, I don't know that we know how he's handling it yet. He's expected to handle it well.
Well, and also he's trying to avoid fines, probably.
I'm just here so I don't get fined. By the way, it's been odd. When they showed the Seahawks highlights, I can't remember what I was watching. They showed Seahawks highlights of the game against the Rams, I think. And seeing a game played without fans in the stands suddenly seemed jarring. And watching that at the Olympics.
It is pretty strange.
It's amazing how quickly it's flipped from, oh, it's so strange to see fans there. These fans should not be there, too. Wow, there were no fans there? That's weird.
No, I agree. It's very strange watching games without fans.
We get acclimated quite quickly, I guess, is the moral of the story.
Well, Baby Fantasy Genius is just constantly watching football videos on YouTube because I'm a pretty good parent. And there's like highlights of something or whatever, times that a player like did a video game thing or whatever. And you're looking at it and it's throughout the years and there's a game without any fans. And I'm like, oh, that was last year.
Yeah, we'll sort of always be able to instantly recognize when that was.
It's going to be strange to watch forever.
I've mentioned this on Twitter, I think, but last fall when I was watching video before the draft and I was watching college prospects play in February and March, number one, it was strange to see the bottom line where they had updates on the progress of coronavirus in other countries. And it was always like, nah, that's not a thing that's going to come here. No, definitely not.
That was on the bottom line on...
Yeah.
Yes, it was like China's factory shut down.
No, I think this was already by like March. I think this is like the Italy part of the process during conference tournaments. But it wasn't odd to see fans in the stands to me. It was odd to see coaches dressed up. That's the part that threw me off.
Coaches aren't dressed up anymore?
No, I mean, they're wearing polos all the time now.
That's what we've lost? Thank God.
Yeah, no, it's a change for the better. It's just very strange now to see a coach in the sidelines in a suit.
Okay, well, we seem to have nothing to fight about the Seahawks. We've done our searching. Can I ask you some NBA questions?
All right, let's go for it.
I saw a report today that the Oklahoma City Thunder offered the number 6 pick plus Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the number 1 pick, presumably for Cade Cunningham. Is this a real report that you've seen anywhere? Or?
I saw that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was trending. That's all I know about it.
Is that a reasonable trade offer?
I proposed the number 4 pick straight up for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander under similar logic. So, yeah, I don't think it's unreasonable.
But it clearly was not accepted. Like, Detroit is drafting Cade Cunningham number 1.
That seems likely to be the case.
The Blazers, as we head into the draft and free agency, how much steam is there around Ben Simmons to Portland? Seems like they're one of a handful of teams that there's chatter around.
Yeah, I don't know how much steam there is.
You don't think it's real?
Maybe it is. I don't have a good sense of it. I would be a little surprised if Daryl Morey made a trade like that before Bradley Beal and Damian Lillard's future was determined. But You know, maybe he could.
Daryl Morey is like so uniquely suited for this situation to not fuck it up, right? Like they have the best GM on earth to handle this particular situation.
I mean, I keep coming back to, there's a line, well, not a line in Moneyball. There's a section in Moneyball where Billy Beane details his rules for making a trade to Michael Lewis. Uh-huh. And one of them is, the day you say you have to do something, you're screwed.
I don't believe that Daryl Morey would feel uncomfortable at the idea of going into next season with Ben Simmons on the roster.
So, but other people feel differently about the situation. They think it's quite possible that Simmons' trade value declines next season if he doesn't play well. And, you know, reasonable people can disagree on that one.
The problem is that Ben Simmons is good. Right?
Yeah.
Ben Simmons is a good... Where does he... In your NBA rank? He ranks in NBA rank, right?
In the top 100?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top 50.
Yeah. Well, probably in the top 25.
Daryl Morey is going to be... I'm just telling you right now, Daryl Morey is the least affected person. He knows what people are saying on Twitter, but is probably the least affected person from what people on Twitter are saying, what Talking Heads are saying, right?
Still getting paid by the Rockets, so... What does he need to worry about?
I'm telling you, didn't the situation end up in the exact right hands?
I think so, yes.
Okay, Jalen Suggs from a Washington State perspective. Pick 4?
Yeah.
Where?
Toronto.
God.
I mean, I think that's the most likely outcome.
Are we cheering for Jalen Suggs in Toronto?
Of course.
God, I like it.
I really like those Rafts. I mean, I'm a big OG Anunoby fan, and Chris Boucher and Fred VanVleet. Those are my guys. So you add Jalen Suggs to that team, I'm all in.
All right, I'll cheer for Jalen Suggs.
Moving to Tampa to follow the Raptors.
Are they going to play in Tampa again?
They should be back in Toronto. I mean, the Blue Jays are back now.
Any other Northwest perspective in the draft?
Well, Corey Kispert will also likely go in the lottery.
He's not good, right? We can all agree.
No, I think he's good.
Shades of, what's that dude's name?
Adam Morrison? No. I don't know where you're going with that one.
Who is the other dude from Gonzaga?
The other dude from Gonzaga?
You know, he like went pick 12 and was, went to the
Robert
Pistons.
Robert Sacre?
No, different one.
Oh, Richie Fromm?
No.
No, you're
Dan
taking
Dickow.
Austin Day?
Is that maybe, who you're taking? He's the one who went to guy.
The... He's the one who went to the Pistons.
No, later. More recently.
Oh, went to the Pistons from Gonzaga.
Maybe not the Pistons. He was like a player from Gonzaga who was like picked 10 to 12 and it was freaking awful.
Oh, no. Kyle Wiltshire wasn't taken that high. I really don't know where you're going with this one,
huh,
Chief.
Where is Corey Kispert going to go?
Probably end of the water.
Is there a team in particular?
I mean, Charlotte picks in that range. I don't. By the time you get to 13, you can't think about a specific team.
Wow, you clearly do not work for ESPN.
I'm just saying, there's so much shit that can happen. Like the top 5 picks, you can think specific picks, specific team. Outside of that, it's, you know, sometimes you can get it right, but the odds go down substantially by that point of the draft.
Maybe I am thinking of Brandon Clark. Oh, Zach Collins is who I'm thinking of.
No, oh, no. Look.
Notable bust.
Zach Collins is going to get it together. It
must have been Austin Day. Well, I forgot that Ronny Turiaf went to Gonzaga.
Really reaching back to 2009 on that one.
Is there any player in this draft who, last year we went into the draft and Haliburton was your guy?
Oh, Elperin Şengün.
Say that name again.
Elperin Şengün.
From where?
Turkey.
Where is he projected?
End of the lottery, middle of the first round.
Okay.
He's number one by a mile in my projection. MVP of the Turkish League.
So we can just right now.
At age 18, I should say.
Players to watch for the 2021.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, mark my words, if the Denver Nuggets somehow trade up to get Elperin Şengün as a backup to Nikola Jokic.
Elperin Şengün. Yeah. Okay. I see him.
I'm kind of amazed you managed to get that spelled correctly from that name.
Well, I typed in Alperin. I got that. And it fed me the Şengün. So that's who we should be watching in this draft.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever drafts Alperin Şengün knows what's up.
Exactly.
And they read your stuff.
I don't know if I'd go that far. It's not like I'm the only one who likes Elperin Şengün. Again, it was the MVP of the Turkish League at age 18. Every stats-based projection is going to have Şengün extremely high.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know this was the Shingun draft.
Oh, it is. I mean, the only guys with better projections than him by my model are Luka and AD. Like, no, he's in the same range as DeJuan Blair and Kenneth Faried. So it's not like he's going to be an MVP, necessarily.
Kenneth Faried was pretty good, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had
and Alperen Şengün has ACLs.
He does, that's true. That's a one key distinction between him and DeJuan Blair.
Wow. Okay, all right.
He has more than zero functioning ACLs.
Well, I guess we'll keep an eye out for... the draft's on Thursday, right?
It is on Thursday.
I'm going to be in Los Angeles.
Wow, we know what happens when you're in LA during a draft. Let's see if the Seahawks trade Earl Thomas.
Earl Thomas is getting traded.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
The Cardinals are getting quarterback of the future.
Wait, do you want to talk? You never talked about your collab. Do you want to talk about that? The Seahawks Twitter collab everybody's been waiting for?
Nah.
Okay. All right, well, it's out there. It's out there on YouTube if you want to check it out.
Who is that quarterback? Oh, yeah, Josh Rosen.
He went that day?
Yeah.
You thought he was good?
Oh, I thought they got the best quarterback in the draft.
Oh, on that note.
Wait, who was the best? I have to look.
Who was the best quarterback in that draft?
2018 draft.
I mean, Baker was in that draft and Lamar, right?
Oh, well, yeah, okay, Lamar would be the... That, but of the top, they were all pretty bad at the top. Oh, Josh Allen. Man, I can't believe... All right. Well, yeah, Josh Allen would have been the...
Yeah, there you go.
Of the high first round quarterbacks.
I mean, he's played better than Baker though thus far, but you're being curiously dismissive of Baker.
I'm not being dismissive of Lamar. He's obviously the best quarterback, but I'm talking the first 15 picks. I was not denying that I'm being dismissive of Baker.
All right, on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.